Welcome to Ulcerative Colitis, Autoimmune Healing Journey. I am your journey guide, Jay India, and I'm so happy that you are here because this is a supportive, positive environment where we can heal together. Please note, I am not a doctor or health professional in any way. If you would like to attempt something mentioned in this episode, please consult your doctor or mental health professional first. Today, we are discussing, and I'm so excited about this episode, is IBD mold toxicity with the famous Ally of the wonderful Instagram page that I know all of you follow or you're going to be following after this. Ally is a holistic living, homesteading, home birthing mama with a passion for all things health and healthy homes. She turned her pain into passion as an eco-conscious interior designer who has overcome many health challenges due to mold toxicity. She now designs and builds healthy tiny homes alongside her husband in Ontario, Canada. As an avid researcher who is certified in functional nutrition therapy and environmental health, Ally shares a hope for healing and resources for those who are suffering from complex illness due to environmental toxicity. Welcome, Ally.
Thank you so much for having me.
So excited for you to be here. We had a great conversation for our pre-interview, and I cannot wait for everyone to hear your story because it's so compelling. So without further ado, please let us know your fascinating story of IBD and mold toxicity.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis in my first or second year of college, and that would have been like in early 2000s, and I was studying to become an interior designer back then. I was actually living in a water-damaged home, but of course, being so young, I just had no idea that mold could be a factor in contributing to poor health. You know, we had multiple leaks in that house. I had the bathroom that connected to my bedroom, the shower actually leaked, a huge leak. And all I did was stop using the shower. I just used the other shower in the house. So that wasn't addressed at all. And it connected right to my bed. So I could literally lie there in my bed looking at the bathroom. And also in that house, when it would rain, we'd have to catch the rainwater with pots.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So it was obviously a problem. And so I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis there. My roommate was actually diagnosed with ADHD and a stomach ulcer at the same time. And my symptoms started with chronic infections, like being sick often, which then turned into really, really bad anxiety and then hormone issues. And then my first symptom presented as just blood in the stool. I had no digestive issues leading up to that. I ate really, really well, cooked all my meals. I was raised, you know, in a super healthy home where my mom cooked, you know, so just it was not something that was on my radar, but I immediately knew something was wrong and got checked out and discovered that I had ulcerative colitis. And so I knew right away after consulting with gastroenterologist that I didn't want to do the allopathic medicine route. It just sounded scary to me. And I think part of me still was not ready to accept the diagnosis as this permanent kind of thing. So I immediately started working with a naturopath. I just went on this 5 or 6 year journey of trying to heal myself holistically. So doing whatever I could to the best of my knowledge. I was still very young. So, you know, exercise, eating well. I ended up finding the specific carbohydrate diet at the library one day because we didn't really have Google back then. So I worked with a naturopath doing all the things. I eventually found a functional medicine doctor who I worked with who, you know, ran functional labs and got me on IVs, and I did everything. And actually, coincidentally, during this time, I did move into a new construction home. So I just continued on that path, you know, parasite cleanses and juice feasting and just all the things. And eventually, I got to this place where I was doing a colon cleanse, and it involved taking psyllium husk powder before every meal. Within 3 months, I went into this deep, deep unmedicated remission. So I stayed there for like 5 years in this really deep unmedicated remission, eating a really broad diet, totally living my life. I got married. I had my first son. I got pregnant with my second son. And like, I'm living my best life, like doing all the things I love. And it was just so, so, so great. I was so grateful. I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, like when you come out of chronic illness and you come out of that fear state and you just have a new appreciation for life. And I was really in that state, just feeling so grateful. Being that my husband and I are in the design build industry, we actually owned and operated a green building construction company at the time. We were seeking out a family home and we decided to buy the most, I don't know, it had the most character we could find, which was this stone cottage on some acreage. So it worked out really great for us. We could bring our animals there and have our gardens. It was a really exciting time. We gutted the first and second floors. We rebuilt the whole house with shielded wire and everything was wired. So it was low EMF and we did clay on the walls and we refinished the floors with non-toxic, zero VOC finishes. And it was just this beautiful little nest for our family. And within a few weeks, I gave birth to my second son in that house. Yeah. So within a few months, everything shifted. And all of our health started to decline. I immediately started looking to diet and started pulling out foods. We all were having digestive issues and an inability to digest foods properly, loose stools, alternating loose stools, diarrhea, constipation. There was a lot of neurological stuff. I could tell that our immune function was really suffering because we would just constantly be sick. My kids had ear infections and bronchitis. And, you know, we'd look at someone cough at the grocery store and we'd wake up with a sore throat the next day. So we were definitely suffering with a lot of what I would say is, you know, weakened immune responses.
Was there rectal bleeding at that point?
Not yet. That took some time, actually. So this was 2013 when all this began. We had moved in to this house and the digestive issues really crept up on us. So it just progressed. And for me, it was, you know, went from like frequent colds and flus to neurological stuff to hormone stuff to the digestive stuff really, really becoming a major problem. I can talk about it more later if you want, but it was so severe. I was in and out of hospitals. I ended up in a refractory flare where they didn't know if I had Crohn's or colitis. I had every testing, every imaging done four times upside down and backwards, and nothing really was coming back as being extremely severe or like the colitis was there. It was definitely a flare, but it wasn't explaining all my other symptoms. So I had like biliary dyskinesia. They did find sludge in my bile. I had cholestasis.
So you have to explain that a little bit.
Okay.
The first two words you say.
Yeah.
See, she's so advanced, guys.
I'm sorry.
No.
It was really tricky for me to learn all this too, because it was also new. Like in the past, my ulcerative colitis symptoms really did not present this way. And so it was really a scary time and I became completely non-functional. But basically with gastroparesis, the nerves are not firing and you're a stomach is not emptying at the correct time. Same with the biliary dyskinesia. It's the exact same thing. Your bile is not pumping when it's supposed to. So nothing was really firing at the right time. I'd wake up every night having to throw up and just being really, really sick. I couldn't digest anything. By the end of the time that we were in that home, which would have been 2015, 2016, I weighed 88 pounds. I'm 5'7". And that was the last time I weighed myself. So I probably got thinner. I didn't have a scale at home. So that was just at a doctor's office. You know, we had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to get me well. Medications were not working. Nothing was working. No, functional medicine wasn't working for me. I was just incredibly sick and surviving on boiled meats and meat stock with a little bit of homemade sheep's milk kefir. And that was it. That's all I could tolerate. And so I really felt like I was dying. On top of that, my husband had been bit by a tick in that time and he was treated with 6 weeks of doxycycline, did nothing. So we went to a more holistic approach with him and we were working with a Lyme literate doctor. He wasn't really getting anywhere. He had severe joint pain, headaches. His knee would fill up with fluid and he'd have to have it drained. My oldest son had severe neurological issues. He was expressing ASD-like symptoms, so autism-like symptoms. He had tics. He had a severe stutter, so some days he couldn't even get words out. And then my youngest had developed eczema, just head to toe eczema. It was just a really stressful time and nothing was working for us. In the end, I was reliant on 5 days of hyperbaric oxygen chambers. So I'd have to get up at 5 a.m. before everybody got up. I'd go do my hyperbaric oxygen. I'd come back. I had like handfuls of medications and supplements from my allopathic medicine doctors and my, you know, functional medicine doctors. And it was just barely keeping me alive. So it was just a really, really scary time. And in this time, I continued to explore different avenues. And so I had gone to see someone who specialized in nutrigenomics. So we were looking over our genetics because I figured it had to be something genetic if my kids were also suffering. I had gone through all the root causes. Like I had treated parasites and candida. I had looked at structural issues. I had, you know, you name it, I had gone through it. And I felt so desperate and didn't really feel like there was much left for me. And it all happened in this 1 month where there was this huge shift. So I go to see this man, brilliant man, who specializes in nutrigenomics, and he's sitting
okay,
with me.
So let's stop for one second. What, around what year is this?
So this is the end of 2015. So the end of 2015, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting with him and he's going over my labs and looking at my genetics and he says, he's asking me questions and he says, do you have mold in your home? And I'm like, yeah, of course. Doesn't everybody have mold in their home? You know, mm-hmm. and the mold in our home was severe. Like it was growing through my bedroom wall. We would just paint over it. It was on the back of my blackout blinds. It was in the attic. It was in the basement. It was under the kitchen sink. It was everywhere. And he's like, well, for you, I'm looking at your genetics, and it wasn't really explained to me very well back then. He said, you cannot remove mold from your body. So this could be an issue for you and it's something that we should explore. And then we talked about other things. I kind of really just put it under the rug. I just didn't, I don't think I was ready to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's like that with a lot of people. It's so bizarre that just kind of, oh, okay, well, I'll think about that later. And so I go home and I think I did like some essential oils in the house. And I don't know, like,
we always go back to those essential oils,
right?
Even when we're dying.
Yeah, I know. I love them, but it just wasn't going to fix the problem. Yeah. But it made the house smell good. Yeah. So anyhow, so then a week later, I go to see my holistic psychologist and we're doing some neurofeedback and tapping and, you know, we're doing all the things and nothing's really been working. I'd been working with her for a while, because I had been having such bad anxiety and panic attacks. And so we're talking and I'm going over my typical spiel about how I can't stand all these medications and all the symptoms make me nervous. And then I have this other practitioner telling me it could be mold. And so we're at this point where we're trying to rule out Lyme or mold, because that's, it's got to be one or the other. And so she looks at me, she puts her pen down, she puts her notepad down and she says, okay, I want you to leave my office. I don't want you to come back until you figure this out. And I'm like, okay, why? And she says, well, because I had a client who had many of the symptoms that you have. It ended up being mold and she was treated. She left her home and she got well. So then the wheels started turning for me. I'm like, okay, well, I trust this woman. Something must be with this. So I go home, I talk about it with my husband, and he immediately starts getting to work, being a contractor, trying to fix the areas in the house as best as he can.
Men are fixers.
I know. They need to do, right? That's the, that's their way of helping. Well, my husband anyway, it's not all of them. But so he gets to work, and a little while later, I go to meet with my husband's Lyme literate doctor, and he has all my labs there. So he did the Igenics, and I did like a urine PCR and all these different tests. And so I'm sitting in his office. He's looking over everything and I'm kind of nervous because I was avoiding this because it was a really scary thought for me because I know how hard it is to treat Lyme. I'm sitting on the examination table. He's like, well, I have great news. You don't have Lyme or any co-infections. He's like, but it looks like you have mold illness. So I had to pick my jaw up off the floor because now it's three people telling me this who are very respected, very knowledgeable. And so I have to take this seriously now. So I
now you have to listen.
Now
it's the sledgehammer, right?
Exactly. Like the third time I got to listen. So I go home and I have the talk with my husband. And at this point, I still don't really understand what mold toxicity is at all. But he's like, okay, we're going to fix this. Don't worry. So he pulls his workers off their crews, and for a month, he works in the backyard building a safe house, a tiny house. It happened to be on wheels because we had a trailer. And so they all get to work every day. They're there. And while this is going on, you know, I just go into full on research mode. And I think a lot of people can relate to this. Once you learn about mold and you start looking into all the different things it causes, you kind of have this like aha moment.
Yep.
Yeah. Where you're like, okay, so you mean to say that all my issues, my specific hormone issues that I've been diagnosed with that 15 years that functional medicine doctor told me I have, that's a distinct feature in mold toxicity. You mean like my high cholesterol, all these things, my low B vitamins, that every single box.
We have the same symptoms, Allie. I was in the best shape of my life. I was a cross country runner. I was 17. I was eating relatively well, and I still had really high cholesterol. Couldn't figure it out.
That was me. Yeah. And when you're younger and you get that diagnosis, it's not so scary. You just kind of follow the traditional recommendations to eat less meat and butter and eggs. And you just don't really think about it. But now realizing what that actually means all these years later, it's so interesting to me. So I'm learning about this, putting all the puzzle pieces together and just really feeling hopeful for the first time in a long time. And so the day came that it was time to move out. And we just left with the shirts on our back. And we went into this new space with, you know, new wool mattresses and all non-toxic things. And we get in there and it was a miracle. So the first week, my oldest son, he was able to speak. He didn't have ticks, his neurological issues just melted away. It was like I had a new child. And my younger son, the same thing, his eczema, that I tried everything. I tried everything natural, all the steroid creams, everything. By the end of that first week, it was 80% better. And my husband, his Lyme symptoms, gone. So ever since that first week, he has never had a Lyme symptom again. And he has never had to have his knee drained again since then. So, and for me, I immediately started feeling relief. I was able to bring in some steamed vegetables right away and just, it was some big improvements, but I actually didn't see the major improvements as still I started on the bile acid sequestrant, the cholestyramine. And I actually forgot to mention. So when I was at that appointment with the Lyme literate doctor, he handed me a prescription pad and written on it was Dr. Shoemaker. And I'm so thankful for that because now, years later, having worked with so many people, you don't always end up in the right hands right off the bat. And I did. So I immediately got an appointment with Dr. Shoemaker and he educated me on the topic. I aligned with a local, because Dr. Shoemaker doesn't actually practice medicine anymore, but he consults. So I aligned with a local SIRS doc, a Dr. Shoemaker trained doctor. In New Jersey. I started working with him to get all my labs done.
So okay. Dr. Shoemaker, you guys, is responsible for the SIRS protocol. Mm-hmm. Am I correct? And mold toxicity, you can find him on survivingmold.com. So I've talked about him many times, but I've talked about survivingmold.com. He is the guy behind it. He's the guy who's behind this mold toxicity protocol that I'm doing. Remember my doctor, episode 43, Dr. Peg, Margaret DiTullio. She's the one I go to and she is his protege. So they're very closely linked. If you go to any of these mold toxicity conferences, you'll see Dr. Shoemaker and then you'll see my doctor, Dr. Peg. So just so they know who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's brilliant. He's brilliant. And I'm just so thankful that he's been doing the research on this. It saved my life. I got right into his hands and worked with one of his trained doctors, got all the testing and just started working through the protocol, which is basically remove exposure, get on a bile acid sequestrant, and you continue running the labs and kind of going through the phases of healing. So a bile acid sequestrant, cholestyramine, Welchol, or in Canada, it's called Cholesivellum, they bind to bile acids. And so what happens with people who are genetically susceptible, there's only about 24% of the population, is that when they are exposed to a biotoxin, so in my case, it was mold mycotoxins, my body does not tag them and package them up and make them safe for excretion. Instead, what my body does, because I'm HLA susceptible, so I'm genetically susceptible.
Me too.
Yes, a lot of us are. What happens is that my body takes it in and recognizes it as being dangerous, but doesn't tag it. So it puts it away in storage. So it'll store it in adipose tissue or in organs. Some of it might get sent out to urine, but it's not as likely as the majority of the population. Instead, what it does is puts it out into bile to get it out of the body. And so it goes into bile. It gets excreted along with your food into the GI tract, into the small intestine. So the mycotoxins are now in your small intestine and they travel through the small intestine. They get to the very end of the small intestine, the terminal ileum, where bile acids are reabsorbed because the creation of bile is very expensive for the body. So it actually reuses bile multiple times in one digestive session. So it reabsorbs about 95% of that bile. So it reabsorbs a lot of those mycotoxins back up the portal vein, back to your liver, and the whole process goes over and over and over again. So in each bile dump, you're only releasing about 5% of bile out with the stool. So you continue to stay toxic. You actually can't get these mycotoxins out of the body. So that was my case. And so what happens with the bile acid sequestrants is that they bind to the bile acids in the small intestine and they safely pull the mycotoxins and the bile out with the stool. So now your body has to create new bile. And in the creation of new bile, it's actually going ahead and taking dead cells and removing more toxins from your body, not just mycotoxins, heavy metals, phthalates, putting it out into the bile to send it out. The bile acid sequestrants, that's their job, is to kind of break that recirculation and break that cycle and take the mycotoxins out. And in doing that, not only are you removing them from the gut where they can damage the gut, but you're also pulling them out of the tissues. So that's what it's used for in the Shoemaker protocol.
Correct. And I'm on a binder that does basically the same thing. And I am deciding, I have my appointment. I mean, by the time by this airs, yeah, you guys will hear about my appointment that I just had with Dr. Pegg. And I don't know yet, but am I going to go on the cholestyramine? Am I not? Which is the big guns. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet. The cholestyramine, by the way, I just want to tell all my listeners, I've been mispronouncing it. And I keep saying colostramine, but it's actually cholestyramine. So in other episodes, if you're like, what? That I just am mispronouncing things, which I should know better. But I just want everyone to know that. So continue, Allie. I'm sorry.
I just have to say, I've listened to your entire podcast now, or nearly all of it. I love it. I love your podcast so much. I have
cringe when I say, though, colostrum.
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, it's a journey, right?
It's process. A freaking journey. Yeah.
Yeah, it's complicated. So I get on the colostyramine, and I think because I had done so much work with all the different practitioners and herbalists and, oh, just everything, anything you can imagine, I've done it. And so I get to this point where I can tolerate the colostyramine at full dose. Not a lot of people can do that. Sometimes you have to really work up to a full dose, and especially with inflammatory bowel disease, it's a dance. I think because I had done so much work and I was totally out of exposure at this point, I was able to take the full dose right away. And
wow.
So it was great. And I noticed improvements right away, and those improvements continued.
What were the improvements?
Mm-hmm. You know, my bowel movements began to form. Blood was gone, urgency gone, starts going away anyhow, and bringing back in foods, being able to tolerate food again. So nice. Being able to nourish my body. It's just so nice eating, right? Like, you just take it for granted, but oh, it's such a joy. And so by the end of 6 months on, you know, going through colostyramine, I did have to dance with it, because there is a point while you're using these bile acid sequestrants where it kind of stirs up the dust, so to speak. So it starts pulling the toxins out of your tissues. And that's an inflammatory process, right? Because your body's now having to be re-exposed. So I definitely had to dance with it midway and kind of go off it, come back on it. But by 6 months, I was able to get off all my medications. I was able to tolerate foods again. I had my life back. So I had gained weight and muscle. I felt great, having struggled for 2.5 years and nothing was working. This was a miracle. And to have my children's health back and my husband's health back, I just cannot sing the praises of Dr. Shoemaker enough for having that knowledge and being able to go through that process.
So that's amazing. So let me stop and ask you some questions. The first question I have is, in the beginning of your story, you were in that old home where you had to put the pots when it leaked. Was it an old home or was it a newer home?
It was probably a 15-year-old home. Beautiful home, beautiful neighborhood. Probably should not have gone moldy, but unfortunately, when you have college students living and not caring about it, and there's leaks that are happening and no, you know, you're not reporting it, that's what happened to us. So
the reason I ask is because it's not necessarily an old home, new home issue, because I live in a very old home and I don't have mold or problems in my home. But it's such an old home that it doesn't have things like central air conditioning. I took out all the carpeting, so that's eliminated. It doesn't have crawl spaces. It doesn't have a basement. So I think because it's such an old home, I've eliminated a lot of the issues for mold. What do you think about that?
You are touching on one of the most important things and something that I hope gets more recognition here, and that is that our building practices have changed. So much so. And we're building these super tight, energy efficient homes. We're building them with cardboard. We're building them with plywoods that already have mold spores within them. And you just give those products a little bit of humidity or a leak and you're in trouble. So I find it really interesting. This is probably controversial, but in the blue zones, the homes that people are living in, they're very airy. They're open to the mountain air. Their materials are very natural, but they're like solid wood or plaster and the things that with arid air flowing through these homes, they're not going moldy. Same with the older construction methods, plaster and lath. So our homes have changed. Like often people say, well, mold has always been a factor. It's been around since biblical times. It's warned about in the Bible. But the difference is lifestyle and building products and methods. Nowadays, like my children's generation, my oldest son's 13, these kids spend 90%, if not more, of their time indoors, especially in climates like we have here in Canada, where it's cold. So cold, like 6 to 8 months of the year. So there's just so many factors that are not only making mold an actual problem where it's growing more, but we're being exposed to it more because we're inside more. That's why I think we're seeing so many problems with mold toxicity and so much of an influx of it. But it's also, yes, more awareness, people realizing, oh, my fibromyalgia might actually be mold toxicity. My cancer might actually be mold toxicity. My inflammatory bowel disease might be mold toxicity. So it's also its awareness for sure.
Interesting. Yeah. Now you have my mind turning because we want to build a new house. And now my mind's turning like, I really need to be asking about these materials because I'm doing so well in this house. So I appreciate that. Now, you had mentioned psyllium husk and how you were on it for 5 months and it was a great benefit to you. It really helped you. I do not have a good reaction to psyllium husk. I do not have a good reaction to bentonite clay, which a lot of people do, but I don't. I had a listener who said that her IBD was pretty much in remission because of some type of green clay she was using. And I can't use any of that. So I was wondering if you have any comments on that, like why some people are so good with psyllium husk and bentonite clay, but someone like me, what does that mean? Does that mean anything or I'm just curious?
Yeah, well, it goes back to bioindividuality, right? Like even if mold is both of our root causes, the downstream effects that it causes are going to be different. So you might have a certain species overgrowing within your digestive tract that is being fed by the psyllium husk and causing you bloating. I don't know what your symptoms are when you get it, but I'm just hypothesizing. And so that might be why it's hard for you to take, or you might have structural issues. I don't know, but everyone's so different. And I really think the biggest problem that we're finding with treating mold toxicity is that everyone gets kind of stuck in their protocols. And I think we all need to stop and think and say, okay, but everyone is different. every case is nuanced, and we have to really look at this with a functional medicine approach with individuality, because no one person can do the same treatment as someone else. It's just, there's just no way. Everyone has their own pathogen load. Everyone has their own genetic makeup, right? So it's just, we really have to look at it with nuance. And with the clay, it can cause a lot of constipation. You shouldn't take it long term because it can lead to nutritional deficiencies. It can actually cause blockages. I actually don't prefer clay. There is like a liquid bentonite clay, and there's a Great Plains, and there's also Sunny's that make a liquid. And I think they're okay short term use. They're really great for mopping up endotoxins, and they can kind of take that burden off us. They can lift that burden a little bit. But I don't generally go to that for mold. But if it helps someone, and that's great. Like if it's helping you and it's working, then continue with that for sure. So it's just, again, going back to nuance and finding solutions that work for that person.
You know, when I went to Dr. Pegg, originally they had me on, I think it's called something like UltraBind or something, mm-hmm. but it has bentonite clay. I was not doing well with it. I think, you know, Dr. Pegg has her daughter who's her health coach, which is Ruth. And I said to Ruth, I'm not doing well on this. And she's like, and I always get this answer. She's of course nice and lovely about it, but she's like, oh, you're the only one who's complained. Mm-hmm. And I get that all the time. Like, no, I'm the 1.1111% that gets the terrible side effect. That's why I don't do pharmaceuticals, is because I'm always in that 0.00, you know, whatever. Anyway, you had mentioned that when you were living in that second home, that you had severe digestive symptoms. What symptoms were they?
On MRI, I found that I was having biliary attacks, like gallbladder attacks, with eating foods, like any little bit of fat in them. So it was found that I had the bile sludge, and I had, because of that, the thickening of the bile. Bile's just not flowing as smoothly as it should. So you get this kind of backup, and you get really severe pains. So all that kind of upper gastro stuff was leading to a lot of overgrowth. I also had a lot of nerve damage, so that was slowing and changing motility. I mean, mold causes all of this. It's all in the literature as being caused by mold and mycotoxins. So it's no surprise to me now, but back then, there really wasn't much available to me through allopathic medicine, and even through functional or herbal medicine, there really wasn't much that was helping at all. It was all that and bacterial overgrowth. So I had SIBO, I had SIFO, I had it all. And then I had the ulcerative colitis flare. So of course, everything that goes along with that, feeling just so horrible. But there wasn't one system of my body that was not affected horribly. Like, it was horrible. And I'm just so, so thankful that I'm not there anymore. I haven't shared about getting sick again just in 2021, which is what prompted me to start my Instagram page. But I did get sick again, but definitely not as bad as back in, you know, 2014, 2015, 2016. So
I love that you mentioned gallbladder and bile sludge. I have listeners who write to me about this, and I have told a couple of them, you should really explore mold toxicity. But yeah, I have the same thing, guys. If I eat too much fat, then it really hurts. And I'm sure I have this sludge that everyone's talking about. I'm positive of it. So you may want to check out the mold toxicity if you have these symptoms. So I really appreciate you saying that. And then something else you had mentioned was, you were in a very dire state, and then it got better so quickly. It got better, 80% better in what, a week, 2 weeks, mm-hmm. because you moved from a exposed home to a non-exposed home. And I think, Allie, too, the reason it got so much better for you is, I'll tell you this, when I went on the protocol for Dr. Pegg, I feel like I was so many steps ahead of the average patient, mm-hmm. because I was already eating healthy. I was already, you know, doing really healthy things and had changed my lifestyle and all of that. So how do you feel about all of that? Do you feel like because you were already so healthy, you were able to heal so quickly?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was doing everything. So the thing with mold is that whew, it just shuts down so many processes in the body. It weakens you. It wants to decompose you. That's its job, right? So what I'm seeing within my own self and with other people is that things don't move the needle the same way they would once you've removed exposure. While it's so beneficial to use all these really great tools like diet, like herbs, anything that modulates the gut microbiome for your favor, you know, all these functional tests, it's so important. Like those things kept me alive. The hyperbaric, doing those things, even though the medications weren't working 100%, they were working a little bit. All those things kept me alive in that time. They preserved my colon so I didn't have to have surgery. But it wasn't until I got out of the mold and removed that toxic burden that my body was finally able to start healing. And having all those tools in place and having done all those things 100%, I think, is working in our favor for so many different reasons. I do believe that mold toxicity is kind of a, because it's a genetic issue, it's something that we have to consider for the rest of our lives going forward. And I do think that we need to get into a healing mindset. We need to approach life a little differently. We need to have a healing lifestyle. So even though we can get to a place in the future after overcoming this where we can handle exposures and we don't have to take the supplements, we don't have to take the digestive enzymes, we don't have to be on these herbs for pruning back our, you know, microbiome or dysbiosis or whatever the case may be. So you truly can get free of all those things, but you still have to support your body. You still have to support those systems. So you want to support those detox pathways. You want to support your unique genetic makeup and the things that you find helpful going forward. But it's a lifestyle. It's an ongoing thing. That's how I'm seeing it anyways.
Everything feeds into everything, mind, body, soul. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have one, then you don't have them all. You have to do all of it. Now, my next question is, I was just curious about your opinion. Dr. Pegg, when I had my really bad flare in 2021, she had said to me, I'm not sure if that was a UC flare or it was a cytokine storm because of the mold. What do you think about that? Do you think your UC flare, now looking back, was a cytokine storm? Or do you think it was an actual UC flare?
Okay, this is controversial.
Uh-oh.
I think that my symptoms associated with IBD are mold toxicity. IBD to me is not a diagnosis. It's a wastebasket term. It means nothing. I don't identify with it. I don't even identify with mold toxicity as being my diagnosis. But I know my genetic susceptibility. And I know when I'm exposed to mold, because I've had to challenge this, it's come at me again since then. And I've recovered. My symptoms are mold toxicity symptoms. So if that makes sense, like I don't believe in the IBD diagnosis at all. I think that it's, you know, for me in particular, in the past, my symptoms were symptoms of mold toxicity.
Okay, so you answered my last question of this first part, and that was, does mold cause all IBD?
I do believe that there are other root causes. I've done a lot of research into this. I know certain medications can cause IBD. I know severe trauma, not just emotional, but physical traumas can cause IBD. There's other factors here for sure. For me in particular, and for a lot of people that I've spoken to and worked with, I see mold toxicity being at the root of many cases of IBD. But that doesn't mean it's everyone. But something to think about is that everyone with inflammatory bowel disease is HLA susceptible to biotoxin illness, so mold toxicity. Every one of us. We all have these genes. So much so that they have been researched thoroughly, but the researchers haven't studied this connection about the mold. So once conventional medicine, I believe, learns this, because this is something that Dr. Shoemaker has found in his research about these immune response genes, the HLA genes, is the connection to biotoxins. I believe that once research connects those dots, it's going to be a huge aha moment, because IBD is not the only group of chronic diseases that has HLA. It's cancers, it's autoimmune disease. Now, IBD is not an autoimmune disease. It's an inflammatory condition. There's no self-antibodies in inflammatory bowel disease. And so much so that CDC has changed their definition. Inflammatory bowel disease is not an autoimmune disease. It's an environmental disease. I think that once this information becomes common knowledge, it takes 10 to 20 years for conventional medicine to catch up to research. And Dr. Shoemaker's research is really only, even though it's been around for 20 years or more, it's has not been accepted yet in conventional research. So we have a long way to go. But I believe that once it becomes common knowledge, it's going to shift medicine in a huge way.
Perfect answer. And Ali, we are closing in on now 46 minutes. So I was wondering if you'd join me for a part two, where we talk about what happened in 2021 with you, and then go into some of the research with mold toxicity and IBD for your wonderful Instagram page. Would you be okay with that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, great. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to close out this episode right now. But first, I want Ali to tell everyone, well, to listen to the next episode next week. But also, Ali, tell us about your amazing Instagram page.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to learn more about mold and its connection to the gut, you can find us at IBD mold toxicity on Instagram. And so I share a lot in my stories. I share a lot of research there. There's a lot of information in the highlights on testing and diagnosis and treatment and research, lots and lots of research. So if that interests you and you want to learn more, you can check it out there.
You guys, this is such a good Instagram page. Ali puts so much of her heart into it. It is, you're a trailblazer, and it has almost 10,000 followers. So I am going to put that in the show notes and directly link it. And just in case people want to quickly look it up now, the handle is_IBD_mold_toxicity, just in case anyone wants that. And in my household, when we have a perfect shit, you know, when it slides out of your body, it's the perfect color and solidly formed, and you're so proud of yourself that you turn around the toilet and you go, wow, we call that a green heart. What do you wish everyone, Ali?
I hope everyone has a green heart day.